Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how deeply grateful I am you chose to, well, spend a little time with me. We're going to be talking about fun till her daddy took the T-Bird away, as the Beach Boys said. And for those of you listening who are too young to remember that, it was a really popular song when we were teenagers. So I hope that you're going to enjoy this program on fun. Listen, as you know, these radio programs, as well as the TV offerings that I do on Aspire, on our website at aspire.org, are all supported solely and entirely upon your tax-deductible gifts. Your sponsorship makes all this happen. Through your gift, we are able to pay for airtime and make new programs, both radio and TV. And this leaks out into the internet and all over the world. And your kindness, your generosity, your loving support changes the lives of people you may never meet in your day, in your physical day, as it were, in your physicality. But nevertheless, you are helping people. And this is really very, very important. So I hope that you will become a sponsor. Give it some consideration. If you go to the website at aspire.org, you'll see support. If you hit that button, a little drop-down menu will come, and it will say, why support Aspire? Which is a very good question. And if you take a look at my explanation there and all of the things that I try to help you with to understand the world and its complications and its difficulties, you'll understand what Aspire means. For being a sponsor, you get lots of wonderful goodies, my message of the month, access to my podcast, videocast, commentaries, and 122 discourses I've done on all sorts of different subjects, from my TV programs on Aspire, from the Tao to We Know Not What We Do to Passing Through the Fires, the Eightfold Path. There's so many there, and that's all yours for free for being a sponsor. So you, well, it's a win-win situation for you, and it helps me to serve humankind. I hope you'll help. Happy, an elated emotion, according to the dictionary, an emotion of carefreeness and all of that other great stuff. And that's just really what people want. They want a carefree life, a life where they don't have to do much, think much, deal with other people, try to serve humankind. They just want to have fun, have pleasant emotions all the time. So I get these emails from people, and I don't know who they are, where they come from. I really don't. But they're interesting emails about people themselves and fun. And I got a few of them in the past 6 months or so. So I put together some of the questions, and here we are today. First one comes from Jim in St. Louis, Missouri. He says, does everything have a purpose, like you say? That would seem that there is a plan. And if there is a plan, how come it doesn't seem to be fun? Jim, listen to me. We assume a great deal. We measure, let's say, the existence of a God based on the premise of our emotionality, our psychology, our body. We make God into the image of our own likeness. Now, I know what the Bible says, but it's just, you can't live by a book written, you know, thousands of years ago that you don't know the authors. You don't know what their frame of mind was. You don't know their culture. You don't know their emotionality. You don't know enough about them to understand if they're relevant to you. We make up these things. A lot of the things that you read in the Bible are allegory and parables, and they don't really have a lot to do with the literal word. And you would have to get into their culture and the way they live and the whole economic situation they have, and bingo, there is your issue. There is your problem. So I'm not going to go into this idea of God, because it's an assumption. It's a presumption. It is an assertion based on Well, my ignorance of thinking that there has to be someone in charge here, okay, with a purpose, that God has a plan. I hear this all the time from people. Well, God has a plan and you can't know it. Well, isn't that a wonderful out for just not admitting we don't know, or that maybe the whole situation that we're talking about here hasn't come to complete fruition? So it's silly. You ask me, does everything have a purpose? Yes. Everything is intelligent in this universe except us. We have not arisen to our deepest place of intelligence on this earth yet, and we may never do it. It doesn't. History would say, no, it's never going to happen. But if you begin to look at the way, the truth, and the light of it, you will see that a great many people in this world are not awakened yet, many of us. So because we're not awakened, we only have our intellect, and we tend to look at things from the point of view of right and wrong, good and bad, and make assertions there. And when we do that, of course, we miss everything that is deeply significant and important to our life. And who can tell you differently? I mean, people just do what they do and think what they think and act the way they act and live the way they live based on the premise of what they think is right and wrong, good and bad. So now let's take it a little further. Everything that happens to us, every single molecule of a moment, has a purpose, a higher loving purpose than what we can fathom in our own minds and what we can believe in. So because we live in a concept rather than in consciousness, because we live as our own concepts, our own beliefs, not in consciousness, we miss a great deal of what life is all about and what the livingness of our life is all about. And due to that, we make it very difficult for us to be spontaneous. We make it also very difficult for us to see the way things work. How do I teach you the way things work here in 5 minutes? How do I do that? They work as they work. They live as they live. And if you look at it, Jim, not from the perspective, logic, and reasoning, but just look at it from no perspective that makes any sense to you from logic and reasoning, you will see that life is filled with begats. This that I am doing this morning with you here on the radio will begat something else that I will do in a day, and something else, and something else, and something else. And these begats work together. They work together to make a combination, a combine, as it will, of my whole entire life. And these begats become the karma of my life, and what I do, and how I work, and how I live, and how I think, and the whole shamatha is there. Everything that is important is there. I live my life in accordance with a flow, an ebb and a flow. And yes, everything is significant. Everything. And everything I have to answer to, or answers to me, one way or the other. Now, let's get to the God part about not having fun. What is fun? What are we talking about here? Look at the world the way it is. Is it not the result of fun? Is it not the result of the way things are inside of me and the result of how things work inside of my life? And if it isn't fun, if it isn't pleasurable, if it isn't carefree, if it isn't gratifying, we want nothing to do with it. So I am assuming, and I could be wrong here, and I'm really wrong, that you're trying to figure out how to put the begats together in a pleasant way in order to sustain having some fun in your life. And maybe if you do that, if everything has a purpose, a reason, a function in our life for whatever reason, you can make some fun out of this. And, you know, theoretically, you could be right or not. You'd have to try it out for yourself. But I guarantee you there are some pretty sobering moments in our life, pretty sobering. And these moments sustain a great deal of, ability to see things for the way they are, as they are, and how they build in our life, how they sustain themselves through love. It is really all about love. And if you're willing to drop the idea of seeking perfection or seeking to put your ducks in a row only to have fun, to be frivolous, as it were, then you're going to find a great deal of sorrow and misunderstanding, which is what most of us do. Most of us, we miss the meaning of our life. I do not believe in being serious, though. I want you to understand that seriousness is the disease of the mind, and I am not thinking in terms of being serious yet. I am talking about replacing it with being conscious. And that to me is far more important than anything else in this living, being conscious. I got to go. Jim, I hope that helped you. Really, I do. And if I confused you or whatever, get a hold of me, call me, and we'll chit-chat. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question from Tim in San Diego. I just want to have fun, Greg. I want to have fun in this life and be happy and carefree. Is this wrong, Tim? Happiness is a quality of consciousness. It is not the state of my humanity. It is not the state of my thinking. It is a quality of consciousness. And once you achieve a sense of this consciousness through the practice of meditation, the practice of insight, the practice of kindness, you will start to see that everything has meaning and purpose. You will start to realize that in this meaning, in this purpose, there's a great joy in living. And the things that we have to deal with, like difficulties and problems and situations, they can resolve themselves. And you can be a part of that resolution. And that also is a great joy. That is also a great blessing and a responsibility in and of itself to achieve things through love, kindness, playfulness. But to make life eat, drink, and be merry, and only keep it in the eat, drink, and be merry modality is not a wise thing to do. Do you remember the teachings Jesus offered? A man had a barn, and he tore it down and built new barns. He came into some moolah, and he thought he had made it in this world. And he tore down his old house and built a new house, and he revamped his whole life. And his motto in life was, now it is time to just eat, drink, and be merry. This is the way people think. Let's party. Let's have a great time. So instead of using his money to do things that might serve humankind, help people, help his neighbors, he just wants to party, party, party. And that's all he did. And then in the parable, Jesus says at the end, he talks about the whole idea of eat, drink, and be merry. But one night, he said, one difficult night, your soul will be required of you. And then what will those things mean? This is profound. This is extremely profound. One night, your soul will be required of you. This is an extremely insightful point of view, because there always comes that time in our lives, all of us, mine included, where our soul is required of us. What we have done, what we have lived, everything comes to a point of, crescendo. And then what are we going to do? What will we do? How will we live our life? Will we do the things that make love possible? Will we have the horsepower inside to do the things that make love possible or not? What does it mean to have your soul be required of you? It means that all of your wits and your faculties and your brain power and all of your imaginary beliefs and theories now come down to one moment. What are you going to have? Something of real substance, not character, more than character. Something of real substance is going to be asked of you to sustain your life. And then what will those things mean to you? Well, I think we've had this sometimes in our life. Few people have. They get what they want, and then they find out, something has happened. Maybe it was something in the physical realm. Maybe it was something in your body. Maybe it was something in your physicality or something. I don't know. But you realize all the king's horsemen and all the king's men aren't going to be able to put this back together again. And you really realize that. That is what Jesus is talking about. That is what he is saying to us. That there will come a time in our life where our life will require more than just what we believe we have or what we believe is available to us. What is that thing? That, Tim, that comes with consciousness. It requires a sense of diligence and consciousness to see things for the way they are as they are and to see through the veil of my circumstantial mind into the meaning of what is really happening and not what I imagine might be happening. To live like this, to live in this, to have this sense of beingness is a very important life, a very important thing to do. So let me ask you, I wish you were here, what constitutes being happy? What is it that you believe would make you happy? To have fun? You just want to have fun? You don't want to see the meaning of your life? You want to make fun the meaning of your life? What is fun? What are we talking about here? You just want to go on without any sense of meaning and just have eat, drink, and be merry mentality like so many people I know. So many people I know. Eat, drink, and be merry. Go have fun. Go do the things that you enjoy doing. Line up your whole life, one gratification after another, gratification after another, and you call that the meaning of your life. This is what is important for us to understand. What constitutes that meaning? And that, you know, that I can't give you, no one can give you. One day or another, all of us have to look at our lives. And we have to look at it in the sense of what I call sobering up here. Looking at things for the way they are, for what we've done, the way we've done them, just to see them for the way they are. And to understand what it is about me that made all of these things possible. How did I get here? How do I live here? What is the meaning of my existence here in life? And what is it that's really happening? What am I really being shown? Is life just a string of things that we do to get what we want, to live a life of eat, drink, and be merry, and then one day lights out, it's over, and it just turns to black? Is that what you think is going to happen? These are the things that torment us. We just don't get it. We don't understand what we're really doing, and we want to believe that we do. So to answer your question, is it good, is it oh, I'm not going to say that to you. You have to live your life in accordance to the way you live your life. I am not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm here to just point out some things to you. Maybe some things you hadn't thought about before. We are subject to the way we live our life. We are subject to the mechanism or the consciousness we achieve in this life. If you leave your life to the mechanism, you're going to be sorely disappointed. I can guarantee you that because I have seen it in my own life and I've seen it in many people's lives as a teacher and a counselor. So I can tell you that's a gruesome way to live your life. Or you can live consciously, inherit the joy of your heart, and face everything from that premise. It really is much better than emotionality. I can tell you that right now. I hope that helps you, Tim. It's a tricky subject and a great question, and please forgive me. Namaste. The last question comes from Kate. She does not tell me where she lives. Is God fun and happy? Doesn't seem so. Kate. Kate, I don't know. You know, God to me is a foreign language. I have a real hard time with it because it implies a persona, an ego, a vanity, a pride, a brain. It's crazy. So I don't go there. Is God happy? The question really is, are you happy? Is what you live for about happiness? One of the things I loved about your question was that when you look around this world, you can see it's not a happy place. You know, there isn't a lot of happy things going on in our world. So you have to kind of look at it and wonder what the heck this is all about. What are we doing here? And what is this all about? And if you're not happy, does that mean you've done something wrong or whatever? None of that is the premise for true, authentic living. We've got to go beyond this happy thing and fun thing and get into what is the meaning of our existence. And I think you will find, if you get into it ever so slightly, that it is about a great joy. It is about a joy that, at least for me, exceeds the outer circumstances that I might think I'm going through or putting myself through. It doesn't have anything to do with, well, my circumstances, whether or not they're pleasant. My happiness is not conditioned on the idea that pleasant circumstances and conditions make for a happy Gregory. That isn't the way it is. You can just sit quietly. Want nothing with all of your heart. Just sit quietly, and it'll start to arise this joy. People don't like to meditate or don't think they can meditate or won't attempt meditation because they think they can't do it, because it requires in them a whole slew of letting go. And their minds have become so addicted to the idea of what they want, what they believe in, what they think is good and bad and right and wrong and all that other stuff, that they miss what really is happening, which is joy, is love, is freedom, is kindness. It has a lot to do with the ebb and flow of the meaning of our own existence. So, yes, you can have this great joy. You can have this great beauty. And when beauty becomes fun, when joy becomes your happiness, when your consciousness is more important to you than your thinking, that is when something of the other shore starts to arise in us, all of us, and we start to find the meaning and the significance of everything that is deeply important to our life. Everything. It is all about love. All of this. And until I understand that, I miss the whole experience of it. Kate, go for the joy of your life, not the fun and games. Go for the joy of your life. Practice. Do some meditation work. Sit quietly. Ask yourself the question, why do I need my emotions to define the state of my happiness? Why do I need to always have this feeling of high to understand the nature of my life? Why? Take it further. Do the thing that makes life and love so important. Let love live you. I'm out of here. Please forgive me. Thank you, Kate, for your question. I'm out of here. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll talk to you next week. I'll be back on the air next weekend. Have a happy, happy Easter, and may it serve you very well with love and kindness. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.